Technologies of anonymous communication, anonymous currency, and reputation systems have been invented. They cannot be uninvented. These are all the ingredients needed to build a circular economy with strong privacy in cyberspace. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. This is the place for those looking for their PhD in Bitcoin fundamentals, and I am your professor, Guy Swan. Thank you for joining me. We have a really great read. We always have a really great read, but we've got a really great one today. And this is returning author and privacy advocate and developer, Nopara73. He's a critical follow in the Bitcoin space. If you aren't staying informed on his work, you are doing yourself a disservice. I have the link in the show notes so you can follow him. I realized, too, that I hadn't actually explored the topic of privacy in kind of a pretty long time now. And it was certainly overdue. So Nopara's drop of this article was prime time for revisiting that discussion. A quick note, though. I am about to head out for Childerberg tomorrow in Austin, Texas. And then in the middle of next week, basically right after I get back from Texas, I will be heading out to Miami for Bitcoin 2021. I will still have episodes, even though it might be a bit thin, but I will probably have a severe absence of guys' takes for those episodes. I'm probably just going to try to pump out those reads so that you guys can still consume the articles while I'm away. Just a heads up on that one, and I hope to see a bunch of you guys in Miami. I am absolutely stoked. Real quick, I hope you stacked with Swan Bitcoin. I was seeing some of the referrals lately and noticed that a bunch of you stacked the dip super hard, and I just got to say how happy I am. It's like a father watching his kids grow up. I'm just so proud. And if you don't have your automatic stack running, SwanBitcoin.com/guy is your ticket to not being stupid anymore. And in addition, we had a boost in BitBox O2 sales from you guys. Finally, holding your own keys. Congratulations. This has been a great month for sovereignty and stacking. I gotta say, I can't help but wonder if you guys kind of gave it a second thought after I told you about those rounded edges. Just saying, you know, it does. BitBox O2 is very ergonomic. But check those both our sponsors out at guyswan.com. And let's go ahead and get into today's read. And it's titled Privacy, Fungibility, Anonymity by Nopara73. Even though Bitcoin is the worst privacy system ever, everyone in the community strongly values privacy. This isn't unique to us Bitcoin developers. This is a well-known and well-researched phenomenon called the privacy paradox. People claim to highly regard their privacy, yet they are observed to neglect it instead. However profound it may be, the privacy paradox is just the tip of the iceberg. Deeper reflections on personality and society await us when setting out to dive into the ocean of NIMs and identities. Privacy is an essential ingredient for self-development. Global privacy trends will revolutionize governments, and fungibility of the world's next reserve currency will shape humanity's progress forward. In this essay, I'll discuss the concepts of anonymity, fungibility, and privacy, and examine some surprising psychological, geopolitical, and economic implications of the technological advancements that are about to sway the future of privacy. Anonymity. Let's start our in-depth exploration of privacy in the land of mathematics, because that's where the concept of anonymity lies. Anonymity was first formalized in a 1998 research paper titled Protecting Privacy When Disclosing Information, K-Anonymity. The authors presented two methods, generalization, and suppression to K-anonymized data, What does the K stand for? You are K anonymous if there are K minus one others who could have also done the same action you did, thereby hiding you in a K-sized crowd. This crowd is formally called your anonymity set. The larger the K is, the more anonymous you are. And K equals 1 represents a unique identity. Consequently, anonymity is teamwork. Anonymity loves company. We can use anonymization through generalization in Bitcoin by creating collaborative transactions. For example, Wasabi Wallet often brings together 100 individuals to make collaborative and shared transactions, namely coin joins. A Bitcoin transaction comprises inputs and outputs, where the role of inputs is to spend unspent transaction outputs, or UTXOs, and the outputs are a new UTXOs. Wasabi users K-anonymize their unique UTXOs such that the result of the coin join is ideally 100 distinct yet K-anonymous outputs, where K equals 100. These K-anonymized UTXOs are indistinguishable from each other. This is how anonymization, a mathematical tool, realizes the indistinguishability, also known as homogeneity or fungibility, property of a currency. Fungibility. Money is the most successful story ever told. It has no objective value, but then you have these master storytellers, the big bankers, the finance ministers, and they come and they tell a very convincing story. Yuval Noah Harari. For humanity to thrive, it is paramount to improve the technology of money. Advancements in human cooperation, pointing, speech, storytelling, writing, money, are a major reason for our success as a species. Leaving the trees behind, our ancestors learned to point to the same target. Later, they learned to point with their mouth. Then they realized it'd be a shame if these hunting stories remained untold and unwritten. At last, they found the holy grail of human cooperation, money. It allowed us for the first time in history, slow down. Stories are prevalent in every area of our lives. They aren't only in books, movies, and games. They also come up when you think, talk, write, or code. They even make their way into the most logical and rigorous scientific research papers. We are biologically hardwired for stories because knowledge and wisdom was passed down through generations using storytelling. The invention of stories scaled human cooperation over one's lifespan. Then money came along. Quote, the most successful story ever told. Harari identifies money as the only story that everyone believes in. We share no belief in God. We share no belief in democracy. We share no belief in human rights, but we all share a belief in money. Why? Money allowed us, for the first time in human history, to abstract away the fruit of our labor, the point of our stories, to its purest form, value. Then we could preserve it and even exchange it for other goods and services. The more securely stored our worth is, and the less friction is required to exchange it, the better the quality of the money. Therefore, it's crucial for the progress of humanity to build increasingly improving money technologies. What is the best money we might conceptualize? Thousands of years ago, an Athenian gentleman, Aristotle, identified the properties of good money. Although economists are still debating the details, the basic idea is this. Money must be durable, divisible, scarce, stable, acceptable, portable, and fungible. Bitcoin, or another cryptocurrency, but most likely Bitcoin, will flip in the US dollar and become the most valuable currency. With the exceptions of stability, acceptability, portability, and fungibility, Bitcoin fulfills the properties of good money. I regard stability and acceptability as meta-properties, As the market capitalization of a currency grows, these properties get satisfied. Portability is also something well incentivized to be taken care of. Although the challenges of making Bitcoin cheap and fast are far from trivial, the brain power directed towards achieving these goals is extraordinary. This leaves us with fungibility as the primary property to focus on. The most important thing one can choose to work on is Bitcoin's fungibility. Money in its various guises derives its usefulness from the fact that one can be relatively certain that a dollar received is a dollar able to be spent without friction or uncertainty. Alistair Berg. Fungibility contributes to the quality of money. Fungibility is a scale. It tells how interchangeable and indistinguishable individual units of a money are. In his 2019 paper, economist Alistair Berg states, quote, that the fungibility of money reduces the costs of exchange is well explored. Bruner and Meltzer, 1971. See also Banerjee and Maskin, 1996, and Menger, 1892. This does not come as a surprise, as contravening fungibility violates the fundamentals of money. It introduces friction in exchanges and makes people question their belief in the money itself. Berg continues, quote, fiat currency derives its usefulness from the likelihood that it will be acceptable in some future exchange, rather than having any intrinsic value or secondary uses. Privacy. Fungibility of a currency ensures privacy of the individual. Privacy is the individual's ability to reveal themselves selectively to the world. The adjective private is often used synonymously with the adjective secret. However, the latter's noun form, secrecy, fails to capture the meaning of privacy, which leads to confusion over the terminology. A more legal strand of definitions emerged in 1890, when privacy was first proposed to be a fundamental human right, and defined as, quote, the right to be let alone. A currency lacking fungibility takes away the individual's freedom to keep their financial matters personal and define the boundaries of their financial life. Therefore, lack of financial privacy is a direct consequence of inferior fungibility. Privacy isn't only a tool for lawyers or philosophers. Since it encompasses an individual's ability, it also has profound psychological relevance. We all begin life by having zero privacy. Then as we grow, we learn to define our boundaries, learn who we let close and who not. Studies on children illustrate this. As they grow, they develop their self-concept. Studies of prison populations show that the opposite of privacy development occurs in these spaces. In such circumstances, the self-concept of inmates shrinks down significantly to their body, some immediate actions, and a few belongings. It's unfortunate when our privacy is taken away by force, but it's more productive to concentrate on situations when we're giving it up voluntarily, because this seems to occur frequently, too. In reality, we aren't giving up our privacy for nothing. We're trading it for something. It's simply that the something we are trading it for is often so insignificant that it looks like we're just giving away our personal information to whomever. This is also the explanation for the privacy paradox: poor cost-benefit analysis and risk assessment. Although there's nothing inherently wrong with trading ourselves for money or other benefits, it's important to know that if we aren't making these decisions consciously, then our self-concept isn't developed enough. We don't have a good idea of where our own boundaries are. We don't know ourselves well enough to decide what personal information we want to trade in exchange for using Facebook or for one of its third-party applications that can magically tell us what house we'd belong to in Hogwarts. Quote, the fundamental political difference between people is, how many walls should there be around your stuff? The ultimate liberal answer is zero, and the ultimate conservative answer is, bring on those walls. Jordan Peterson. Currently, society is undergoing rapid developments due to accelerating scientific advancements. How will our privacy, our liberty, our individualism be affected by these changes? What does the future hold? According to economist David Friedman, technological trends are pointing towards a world of strong privacy, but not the way one might expect. Technologies of anonymous communication, anonymous currency, and reputation systems have been invented. They cannot be uninvented. These are all the ingredients needed to build a circular economy with strong privacy in cyberspace. Simultaneously, in meat space, our privacy is eroding. How long will doors and curtains, which are currently cutting-edge meat space privacy technologies, hold against the advancements of mass surveillance? Technology extends human power. Maybe the only way to avoid catastrophes, where humans wrongly exercise their newly gained divine powers, like releasing deadly viruses to the world, is if everyone surveils everyone all the time. Maybe a transparent society in meat space is necessary to balance the power that technology gives us after all. But all this will be irrelevant. As cyberspace grows, including virtual reality, which is increasingly becoming more immersive, meat space is losing its relevance, and for many, it already has. Therefore, it won't matter that we'll be surveilled in meat space, because we'll be doing just fine where it matters, in cyberspace. Friedman's speculation goes even further. In a world where the bulk of the economic activity happens outside of the control of governments, online, governments will become the equivalent of landlords. They'll compete for citizens to maximize tax revenues, and sovereign individuals will be free to choose where they want to live. Quote, economic activity hidden by strong privacy cannot be taxed. If you think that the world would be a better place if government had more access to other people's money, then you think it's a bug. Otherwise, it's a feature. David Friedman. In conclusion, anonymity is a mathematical tool used to realize other values like privacy of the individual or the fungibility of a currency. In economics, fungibility is a contributor to the quality of money, which facilitates privacy of the individual. Privacy is essential for the development of the self. This notion of the field of psychology is especially important because our privacy, our ability to define our boundaries, has changed in the past, continues to change in the present, and is expected to undergo more radical changes in the future. The privacy challenges of the future will not be the same as those of the past. I predict that we'll have strong privacy in cyberspace and weak privacy in meat space. As economic activity is moving from the offline to the online world, the relevance of meat space will shrink. Simultaneously, the relevance of the cyberspace will grow. Therefore, we're looking ahead to a world of strong privacy. All right, and that closes it out. Privacy, Fungibility, Anonymity by Nopara73. Let's hit our sponsor real fast, and then I want to jump into a guy's take on this piece. Basically, the first and most important step to getting your privacy and sovereignty back in Bitcoin is holding your own keys. If you're using a custodian instead of a solid hardware wallet, and an open source one no less, like the Bitbox O2, you basically have no privacy. But even better than simply holding your own keys, the Bitbox app, which has a really simple and straightforward UI, it can be run entirely over Tor so that you're broadcasting your transactions privately, and you can connect it to your own personal node so you're not even requesting address or blockchain data from someone else. You're asking yourself for that information, just like I do. Basically, those are the first, second, and third most important things that need to be done to start to get your privacy back. The Bitbox O2 is a perfect tool for that, and the team over at Shift Crypto has made it really easy and affordable to do those things. And when you are ready to get that hardware wallet and hold your own keys, make sure to use the code GUY, G-U-Y, to get 5% off. It's really interesting to me that Bitcoin has become so core to the idea and the potential of privacy that was always sought out by the cypherpunks. And what's funny is in the cypherpunk history of trying to create digital cash systems, so much of it was actually a focus on privacy and solving the problem of coordination in a decentralized system was in fact critical to the enabling of some types of privacy, because the only way to actually engage in or create privacy protocols around payments was to have a system where a centralized authority could not prevent its execution, could not prevent its implementation. So that was kind of the beauty and or the core ethos behind decentralization, is that, you know, we could build private payments on top of the banking system. That's what the DigiCash, or eCash, I believe, from Chaum and Chaumian Cash and these other systems prior to it, these were actually, a lot of them were actually mechanisms to create private payments within the original, within the banking system that we already have, and to be able to do this at an OS level so that your, I think there were even talks at one point, I remember, that this was going to be implemented into Microsoft Windows, potentially, and this was actually a real discussion, and a lot of people, because cash was so prevalent back then, because the whole world hadn't gone digital and everything at that point yet, and people were used to the idea of that level of privacy, it wasn't seen nearly as extreme as it is today to want to be able to hide who you were paying and how much was being paid, and for a banking institution to not actually have access to that information, even though it could know where it needed to settle payments and how much to settle it with. And there were some really interesting systems, but this was the goal. These were the goals of the cypherpunks. And then in the process of creating Bitcoin, which is a pseudonymous system, it's actually incredibly open in so many ways. It is the chain of transactions is 100% verifiable and traceable. And even though there are not identities tied to any of the addresses, if an identity does become tied to it, well, then it becomes extremely difficult to disconnect it from that. A data leak at any point in the system becomes something that can stick to you or stick to your presence in Bitcoin for a very long amount of time without making very explicit moves to break that connection. And that's why privacy has always been critically important to me. I think this is one of the huge goals of the system. And fungibility is clearly a critical factor in having a sound money. This is actually something that's gotten me so excited about the Lightning Network and the ability to connect into a higher layer, into a layer two system, where essentially which quote unquote Bitcoin you are being paid is irrelevant, because it's always just the Bitcoin that's in your channel. And if you are routing payments, you don't really know, unless you are one of the parties to the payment, you don't know where it's coming from or to outside of the channels that you have with your funds that you are connected to. And then even Liquid in that sense is a really huge benefit, because it has confidential transactions as a sidechain. Yes, it's pseudo-custodial in a way. You're trusting a whole subset of like 20, I think it is, or 15, some large number of separate custodians with their hardware wallets and their signatures, and they're creating a side chain. They're creating a blockchain that is basically a giant multi-signature account that has a threshold for making sure that essentially no individual or even a couple of different custodians could cheat within this network. So in my mind, it's far superior to simply custodial. But the really interesting thing about it is that these institutions who are quote unquote running this sidechain have no idea the transactions that are happening on it. The transaction data is completely hidden because it's a sidechain, because it has its own system of transactions and addresses and script and all this stuff. You can have full confidentiality. That's a pretty significant benefit that's hard to simply discount, because it's got a different security model than obviously the Bitcoin-based chain. But fungibility is, like I said, like Nopara said, it's critical to the soundness and the security and the trust in the money itself. If you can't be certain if your Bitcoin will be accepted because of the history of that Bitcoin, well, then your trust and your confidence in being able to accept that Bitcoin as a unit of value, as a store of value for any length of time, is greatly hindered. Because if you don't know the proper history, maybe somebody else knows something about where that Bitcoin is coming from, and they're going to attach your value to that potential problem or the refusal to accept that quote unquote bad coin as opposed to these other good coins. And I was speaking with, had kind of a chat with Adam Back going, and actually we haven't even really worked out. We talked about maybe doing an episode with somebody else from Chain Code Labs, but we had kind of hadn't worked out the details. But he has actually in Scaling Milan, like some years ago now, talking about different mechanisms that can actually be done on Bitcoin to improve specifically fungibility, which is really fascinating because it's not about privacy. It's fungibility without privacy, by essentially creating a structure, a system, where the transaction that is confirmed is encrypted until it's spent. So eventually the connections and the chain of transactions is revealed. All of the data about that transaction is revealed, but it's on the back end, so it can't be unconfirmed later on, which was a really fascinating idea, just conceptually, that I had never really considered, that fungibility and privacy, or you know, anonymity or whatever, don't actually have to be exactly the same thing, even though I had kind of equated them in my mind because I didn't know how else to achieve fungibility. It didn't seem like without having privacy, you could actually do that. But that was actually a really clever mechanism that I had never really considered, is the idea of having it confirm without knowing that information, even though you did eventually have to release that information later. But then there is the psychological side of privacy. And still to this day, one of my favorite TED Talks, or just favorite anything, my favorite content about the ideas of privacy, which I honestly have, probably the last time I read something by Nopara, I was talking about this video. I know I've brought this up many times on the show before, but there's a really great TED Talk, Why Privacy Matters, by Glenn Greenwald. And one thing, and I've read this in a number of different aspects, and I love how Nopara brings this up, is the psychology of self. The idea of us defining who we are as individuals and how critical our privacy, our ability to go to a place where we can be 100% ourselves and selectively decide what we reveal to the world, is how we define who we are as individuals. And that just the nature of knowing that we are seen, or that somebody could be watching us, fundamentally changes our behavior. It changes our frame of reference. And there's all these stupid things that we might do when we're completely alone. You know, we're cooking in the kitchen or something and we're humming some stupid song that's just completely irrelevant. It's just like, I'm cooking with my pan. And like, you lose yourself in knowing that you are you by yourself, and that you just be that. You be whoever that individual is. And exploring that might be really embarrassing and really obnoxious or stupid in any other context, but it's critical to be able to do that. We need a space that is privately ours to find out who we are in the absence of someone else judging us. And Greenwald talks about in his TED Talk about, he brings up, you know, 1984 and a lot of the, you know, like ideas that were core to what we meant, or what he meant about, Orson Welles meant about the surveillance state, and what the problems are, what the psychology is of feeling like you are being watched all the time. And then the design of the panopticon, the prison, where there was a tower in the middle of the prison and that they could look out and see every single person, every single prisoner in the entire prison was visible from this tower. but that one of the key elements of the design was that the prisoners could not see into the Panopticon. They could not see whether they were being watched or not, and therefore had to assume at all times, because they didn't know when they were or were not, they had to assume that someone was watching them. And that what that does is that rather than creating explicitly a prison for the human body, it creates a prison for the mind, where you never do anything outside of what you think you're being judged for, outside of that bubble of judgment for your peers or your actions. And that this was the ultimate tool for controlling populations. And Michel Foucault, who I think Eric Kaysen brought up Michel Foucault and like some of the theories and philosophies about this exact sort of thing in one of the pieces we read by Eric Kaysen recently. If I'm not mistaken, I'll double check and have the link in the show notes if I find it. But Michel Foucault talked about this being the critical tool in order to control populations, to manipulate and control behavior and change what people say, even if it may not align with their actual values, to manipulate them into conformity and essentially have that social, societal, authoritative power outweigh the ability or the pressure for people to become individuals, to be themselves, and rather force conformity by imprisoning their minds, by imprisoning their ability to express themselves openly. And in a world where the philosophy of liberty and individualism is being absolutely trampled on in so many different ways and aspects, activism and dissidence and decentralization, the ability to express yourself, the ability to transmit and communicate your value, the ability to be private about your finances and selectively reveal yourself to the world is absolutely critical. It's absolutely critical to maintaining that which makes us human rather than that which makes us a group. Because I think I find so often that which makes us individuals, that which makes us embody and understand ourselves as humans, is so often the greatest thing about us. It's when we are in our peak form and finding a mission, finding something that is meaningful and valuable to us. Whereas when we are in groups, we can very often be in our lowest form. We think the least about our decisions. We tend to go with the crowd rather than really understand or find meaningful reason in what we do, believe, or say. We so often simply mold ourselves in groups and in social situations to, and particularly when that social pressure is the highest and when that group is the largest, we find ourselves coalescing around the lowest common denominator of the judgment of our peers. And it is so critical that we have those moments where we are by ourselves to truly think about what we have done, about what we believe, about who we are as individuals. Because in the end, it is those individuals that challenge that conformity, that challenge the status quo, that move the group forward. And so much of that ties back to Bitcoin. So much of it ties back to the idea of value external to our social and political systems. And privacy truly is a critical part, a critical key ingredient to that better future. And Nopara is absolutely, I mean, Nopara, I have huge respect for like everybody who is building those privacy tools. And it's awesome to see the amount of work and the amount of thought and the expertise that goes into exactly that sort of thing. And I still have incredible hope. I think the very nature of the fact that we have a truly decentralized and independent system to build on is exactly why we will get privacy. And as cyberspace becomes more and more relevant, that we do more of our business in cyberspace, that the internet and the digital world become the hub of our economic activity, the more relevant it becomes, by necessity, the less relevant meat space becomes. And that has so many different implications. It has implications on the power to exit or the cost to exit, which is that constant push and pull to the ability to maintain freedom and to exit to remove yourself from a tyrannical regime or a tyrannical political institution. You know, if you're stuck in a country and the cost to exit is to leave your friends and family and never see them again, is to leave your job and your credentials and your all of your possessions and all of these things just to get out from under a Hitler or a Mao, then the cost of exit is as high as a cost could be. It is to leave your entire life. But now imagine your job is in cyberspace. You can do your job in China just as easily as you can do it in the US. That was the point of going full with the production company and with this podcast, is that I want that autonomy. I want the ability to pick up my whole life. If anything ever went so badly that we literally needed to leave, that we could pick up our life and our family and everything that is important to us, and we can plop down anywhere in the world, plug right back into the internet, and I cannot miss, you know, I miss one episode of the show. My money works there because I use Bitcoin. It's no different in one country versus another. My podcast can be broadcast from anywhere. I can talk to all of my friends and family. I still can communicate with them. I end up communicating so much with them just on Signal or Telegram or anything anyway. As more and more of our life becomes digital, as we depend on it more and more, and our actual value, the actual things that we own, move into cyberspace, move into the digital realm, that freedom to take it with you anywhere you go grows in direct relationship to that which you own in the digital realm. And the cost to exit in the worst case scenarios continues to decline when you can take more of your life and that which is valuable and meaningful and that you love in your life with you, or that you don't have to lose those connections or that source of income or security for those that are close to you and for, you know, keeping your life together. And, you know, this is kind of the ultimate dream of cypherpunks, right? And the ability to encrypt that life and reveal it selectively to the world. It's really fascinating. You know, it's not going to go there in a straight line. I think we're going to have these constant struggles of two steps forward, one step back. And, you know, at the end of the day, privacy is largely a process, and so much of it depends on, because we have this privacy paradox, right, that Nopara talks about in the article, is that we know we care about privacy and we talk about caring about privacy, but how many times do we just openly give up our privacy? We just hand it over. We don't even think about who it is that might be watching or reading or seeing everything that we're doing. And I have a normal freaking iPhone, and I'm on a computer that's plugged into, like, I know I take care of my privacy in some ways, but I know I'm completely open in others. Like, I am absolutely susceptible to much of the same problems. I am a prime example, probably, of the privacy paradox. But that's why something that I think is so critical is to make the privacy measures themselves. And this is actually funny how closely tied to the idea of small blocks this actually is that the coin join, or the privacy measure itself, is actually the more economic decision. And this is something with, like, Taproot and signature aggregation and things like the Wasabi coin join that was mentioned in this in the piece, is that when getting privacy becomes something that people seek for the sake of something else, for the sake of literally saving money on fees, when privacy comes attached to that, and you can get both at the same time, that becomes a very, very powerful motivator, and it changes the economics of privacy and or anonymity in this new environment. And that's what I've always think has been the golden ticket. That's the holy grail, is if the privacy measures within the Bitcoin ecosystem become the cheaper, more efficient option, because almost always the privacy measure comes attached to some significant inconvenience, to some extra cost that people can see very quickly. It's very clear what the cost is. It's, oh, I gotta wait another 30 seconds for this thing, or I gotta pay this extra fee. Whereas like Nopara talks about in the piece, is that we don't properly understand the cost or assess the risks of losing the privacy, because the potential cost or damage down the road is so ephemeral. It's so distant from what we are doing right now. If the cost is 2 years down the road and it's like a 10% probability, that's a very different thing than a $2 cost right this second and having to wait half a day, right? So changing that dynamic is so critical, I think, to the privacy problem. But I'm deeply hopeful. I genuinely think we've had the best chance at that we ever have, that we have ever had. And having a base incorruptible money and uncensorable money is so unbelievably critical to even beginning that fight. Going back to the cypherpunks and the 90s and the mission of privacy, was that the reason decentralization became a key focus was that there was no other way to guarantee that we could actually build privacy systems that people could actually use. If it was centralized, someone always had the option to turn it off. There was always a way for an authority to come in and be like, we don't want you to have this privacy. You cannot use this. Decentralized, secure, independent money was the first step. And now I think we continue to make a major steps toward that way. And I think Nopara is right. I think we have a bright future of privacy ahead of us. And we should not lose recognition of just how important that fight, that mission is for the future of a prosperous and free humanity. So, yeah, that's my rant today. Thank you guys for listening. Huge thanks to Nopara for this piece, and for everyone else who cares about privacy and, helped upvote this thing on bitcoinaudible.com/vote. Thank you guys. It was kind of funny to see this battle going on between the popular articles right now. And of course, to the Bitbox O2 hardware wallet, the guys at Shift Crypto for sponsoring this show and for just having such a cool little device. It's a wonderful hardware wallet, and I genuinely recommend it. They wouldn't be my sponsor if I didn't. And same with Swan Bitcoin, our sponsor for the Bitcoin Savings Plan. I use both of these services. This is why they are sponsors, not the other way around. Check them both out at guyswan.com, right at the top of the page, and you'll get 5% off your Bitbox. Don't forget to use the coupon code and $10 free sat at Swan Bitcoin. With that, thank you guys so much for listening. I will catch you on the next episode of Bitcoin Audible. And until then, everybody, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you were listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.